Dear God, in this moment we close our eyes to the things of the outer world. And in so doing we look within to the light which shows us real things, true things, the power and the glory of pure consciousness. It is to this power and this glory that we turn, that we might receive it more fully, that we might know it more truly, that we might become it in our lives, that we might be lifted up above and beyond the illusions and fear and despair of this world, that the light we see within might become a light we bring to the world without, that we might be healed of our sorrow and heal the world along with us. Thank you very much. Together we all say amen.
In this time of spiritual renaissance and growth, we seek roadmaps for the new terrain. Marianne Williamson offers valuable signposts for this journey, which leads ultimately to love. By choosing to view life through a lens of love rather than a filter of fear, stable navigation is possible in the stormiest of seas, and the destination is a world more wondrous than the sweetest dreams. Nightingale Conant is pleased to bring you this live seminar in which Marianne Williamson explores opportunities to express love and forgiveness in the challenging context of everyday life.
I do need to tell you before we go anywhere else with our conversation that there is a temptation to want to get to dessert without digesting the appetizer and the entree. But I must insist that we deal with the basics before we jump to our idea of what relationships are. Because actually, when we do that, when we do take care of the appetizer and the entree first, I think that our whole concept of dessert becomes much different. First of all, the whole concept of relationships as dessert is a little bit fraudulent, because what we want are the rich, gooey, fun things with a lot of whipped cream. And sometimes we tend to leave out of our calculations the things which are not so superficially sensational. An image I use often with relationships, and if you've read my material, you know this, the idea of the long-stemmed red rose. In relationships, often we think in terms of romance, for instance. And if there's a long-stemmed red rose, we want the red bud. We're not that interested in the stem. We're not that interested in the leaves. But the truth of the matter is that if you have a rose bush, if you didn't have a stem, there would be no way to get nourishment to that blossom. So the stems are an extremely important part of what makes a flower. So we dedicate our time spent to put away the ideas that have been loaded into our minds all of our lives about relationships and every other subject in order to start again. The ideas that we have been fed are the ideas that have made us so obsessed with the blossom. The ideas that have made us so obsessed with getting something that we indeed did not always know how to nourish, that we did not always know how to fertilize our own lives for. And so we want to clean the slate, empty our minds as much as possible, and begin at the beginning. A Course in Miracles says that a spiritual path is not a learning. A spiritual path is an unlearning. The problem often in our lives is not that we're needing new information. The problem is that we have certain ideas, certain concepts, certain core beliefs that stand in front of the truth which is etched within our hearts. The enlightened attitudes which we seek are not something which we need to gather unto us, so much as they are forces of consciousness which need to be excavated, which need to be brought up from the buried sands of our unconscious minds. A Course in Miracles says that we are like people standing in a very bright room, but with our fingers in front of our eyes saying, oh, it's so dark in here. And it's not dark in here. We just have these fingers in front of our eyes. The Course in Miracles says that the way God created the universe, God created heaven. Now, the Course in Miracles says heaven is not a condition or a place. Heaven is an awareness of our oneness. God created us in heaven. What does that mean? God created us to be aware at all times of our oneness with others. In a state where we are consciously aware of our oneness with others, we experience heaven. And the Course in Miracles says that that awareness is like an ancient melody that we all remember. And we are all hungry to return to that state of pure oneness. Now, one of the things we're going to have to deal with tonight is that there is a misapplication, a rampant cultural delusion, which is, in a sense, a misapplication of that thought. Because what modern society has basically told us is that we can have that condition with one person. But as we will also see, that is not the way God created heaven. God did not create heaven so that you would have a state of unconditional love and pure oneness with one person, and you'd have it with one person, and somebody else over there would have it with one person. Heaven as God created it is not where two people exclusively love, but where all people inclusively love. So what we will be discussing tonight is that although a feeling of total oneness with another human being is heaven, the heaven we must seek, and which is the context, which is the only true workable one for the achievement of that one-on-one intimacy that we so desire, is one in which we do the mental and emotional and spiritual work of letting go our barriers, not only to loving one person, but to loving all mankind. Not only, the Course in Miracles says, did God create us in heaven, and what that means is that God created the mind within us which has open eyes. And to say that the mind within us, the Christ mind, the spirit mind, the mind of God, what the Jews call the Shekinah, all the great religious systems speak of divine consciousness within us. In the realm of consciousness, which is divine consciousness, our eyes are open. And when the spiritual eye is open, just as we, when we prayed tonight, we said, "Dear God, we close our eyes to the things of the outer world." The physical eye shows us the outer world. And that is why it is said in the Course in Miracles and in so many spiritual paths, the physical senses deceive. The inner eye, the vision of the Holy Spirit, the third eye, once again, all the great religious systems of the world speak of a higher kind of seeing. With the inner eye, we only see truly, for the inner eye is not the eye of the deceiver. The inner eye is the eye of God. And the eye of God only sees truly. The eye of God only sees people who they truly are and as they actually are. The inner eye, the eye of God, only sees people as God created us, which means the inner eye only sees our perfection. So with the inner eye, we see people's beauty. With the inner eye, we see people's innocence. With the inner eye, we see people's perfection. A Course in Miracles talks about how the mind of this world perceives, but the mind of God knows. A Course in Miracles talks about the difference between perception and knowledge. With the worldly eye, what the Course calls the ego, we perceive people. And within the realm of perception, we perceive people's mistakes. That is because within the realm of perception, we perceive people in their worldly state. And in our worldly state, we all make mistakes. The inner eye, however, the eye of God, the Holy Spirit, the Christ, whatever words we desire to use, as the Course in Miracles says, extends beyond perception to what the heart knows to be true. You might have woken up this morning in a very nasty mood. And you called me and you were full of attitude. What I perceive is that you are a first-class jerk today. Now, if I base my experience of you on what the physical world just showed me, I will probably be in a bad mood today because I will be at the effect of your behavior. The spiritual path of enlightenment, theoretically, is one in which I am not that attached to what my physical eyes perceived. I'm not that attached to what my physical ears heard. I'm not attached to your worldly self. That's not the self I fall in love with. I dwell in heaven not with your physical self. I dwell in heaven with the place within you, which is the innocence, the perfection, the beauty that God created. Now, the Course in Miracles is very interesting. Carl Jung spoke of the collective unconscious, correct? That if you go deep enough into your mind and deep enough into mine, there's a level of mental imagery which is identical, correct? We all know that, the mythic underpinnings. What the Course in Miracles takes us to, which actually I believe Jung was at himself, is the notion that the Christ mind takes the notion of the collective unconscious one further. Not only that there is a level of mental imagery within you which is identical to the mental imagery within me, but more than that, the mental imagery within you not only is identical, but that the mind within your deepest self is the same mind as the deepest self within me. Much like the spokes of a wheel. If you identify the spokes with their position on the wheel, it looks like, wow, there are a lot of different spokes here. But if you identify the spoke with the place where it begins, we all begin at the same place. So if we are perceiving each other according to our physical senses, outer manifestation, physical reality, then first of all, there are many, many of us here. Second of all, we all make mistakes. So it is difficult to find our harmony with each other when what we're looking for is the perfect fit outside. So the Course in Miracles rather gives us a viewpoint, much like Michelangelo when he was asked, how do you create a sculpture? Michelangelo said, the marble as I see it, the rough marble that I receive already has within it the statue as God created it. God created the David. God created the Pietà. God created Moses, said Michelangelo. My job, he said, is to get rid of all the excess marble which lies on top of the perfect statue already created. Now, apply this in two realms. First of all, us as individuals. The true self is not something we have to create. The true self is not something we're supposed to make up because we think that that's what will make it in the world. Because by definition, in doing so, there are two problems there. By definition, you're fraudulent because you're trying to make yourself rather than an authentic blossoming from deep within you. And second of all, the very fact that you think you need to do that means that your core belief is that you're not good enough. And basically, our core beliefs will always betray us. Because the subconscious mind is programming our lives according to our core beliefs. So no matter what we do, if our core belief is that we're not enough, we will manifest conditions which reflect back to us that fact. I once knew a man who had an $18 million house, and he felt poor. That's because his friends lived in $50 million houses. So it doesn't matter what realm we're dealing with. What matters is the structure of belief that we have projected onto the external world so that you can have all the riches in the world. What make one person feel like a king could make another person feel like a pauper, because what feeds us is in the realm of our beliefs about ourselves and not external manifestation. So, not only is the idea here of our authenticity, the notion of the genuine self, that which God has already created and we don't have to make. By the way, you don't have to make your perfect self. What do you have to do? Going back to what we talked about at the beginning. We are here to give up false beliefs. The way to achieve truth about who we are
is not to try to paste truth on top of all these lies. As a matter of fact, we all know that that is a particularly fraudulent way to go about spiritual enlightenment. And what it creates is a very strange group of people. You know, people who are like this, you know, a lot of this kind of stuff, because I've read that what spirituality looks like, and if I talk like this, you wouldn't possibly think that I have rage. So this is not about pouring pink paint over the personality cell, because all that that creates is a particularly passive-aggressive and insidious kind of personality structure. This is not about taking our ideas of what enlightenment is, because that's just another fraudulent trip in which we think, well, the person that would want to be with me might want that or whatever. So the idea of finding our own authentic self is principle number one in achieving heaven, because how can we achieve total oneness with another person if, in fact, our oneness is not something we create, but a realm of consciousness that we find within us? You with me? I mean, if all minds are one, intimacy is not something we create. Intimacy is something that we accept as a given, and which we then say, that's what I want. I want oneness. I want the experience of oneness with others. I want the experience of oneness with others. Well, if we want the experience of oneness with others, we can't get there until we dig down into the place with us, which by definition is one with others, which is the true self. Heaven, then, once again, is not a condition or place, but an awareness of our oneness. An awareness of our oneness both with God, i.e. the fact that we have never left, the Course in Miracles says, the conditions of heaven. We have never left the realm of heaven. We have just manufactured for ourselves, as it were, a kind of parallel universe in which we are going around masquerading as something that we are not. The Course in Miracles says it is not your job to seek for love. It is your job to seek within yourself all the barriers you hold against its coming. Heaven is a realm, the Course in Miracles tells us, where the maximal opportunities for joy for all living things are not only provided but accepted. The maximal opportunities for joy, peace, serenity, and love are not only provided, but accepted. Now, going back to this image that love is always coming at us, but we've got our fingers in front of our eyes. What the Course in Miracles tells us is that the purpose of our lives is to be happy. God has already set up a world. He has created a universe which supports our happiness. So we're sitting here thinking, what can I do to be happy? And that's the wrong question, the Course in Miracles says. The Course in Miracles says that by definition, when we let go all the barriers we have to happiness, we will find happiness. And what are the barriers to happiness? Well, the barriers to happiness are by definition the barriers to heaven, because heaven is the condition of happiness. And what are the barriers to heaven? The barriers to heaven are the thoughts which hide from me the fact that you and I are one. The thoughts which hide from my conscious awareness the fact that you and I are one are thoughts which block heaven from my vision. They don't uncreate heaven. These are thoughts, however, which automatically place me in a conscious realm, which is that parallel universe in which I am not in joy. We right? You with me? I mean, think of this. Think of how many times, let's say you just got out of a relationship and you're really grieving. Have you ever thought about some of the times that you just went around crying, and for all you knew, the perfect relationship with you actually came into your experience the day after you broke up with the other guy. But you were so depressed, you didn't meet that person yet because you thought, I need time. Well, that's fine, and sometimes within the worldly religion, we do need time. But in terms of the next step to our ultimate happiness, the universe doesn't need time, because in truth and in eternity, there is no time. So theoretically, the universe is like this giant biocomputer in which there is no lack, in which there is a law of divine compensation. You and I base our experience of the world, or we tend to, or we have been taught by the world in which we live, to base our experience of the world on what goes on out there. Out there, people make mistakes. Out there, people have conflicts. Out there, people separate. Out there, people break up. And if we base our experience of the world on what we perceive as truth out there, there are two things about that. You know, Jesus' story, if you build your house on sand or if you build your house on rock, if you build your house on sand, then the winds come and the rains come and your house is blown away. But if you build your house on rock, then the winds come and the rains come and your house remains firm. Our house is our emotional sense of well-being. To build our house on sand means I'll be happy if they call. I'll be happy if they behave the way I want them to. I'll be happy if we get along this weekend. Well, the problem is that the world outside us may or may not go according to our ego's plan. To say the house is built on rock means that we come to see through the eyes of God. And to see through the eyes of God means that we will only see what God would have us see, and that is someone's innocence. Now, someone's innocence not meaning I will see your innocence when you show me your innocence. It means I'm willing to extend my perception beyond what you show me. What you show me is irrelevant. My perception of you is not going to be based on how you behave today. My knowledge of you will be based on what I know to be true in my heart. Now, obviously, I don't say this glibly because no one here is saying that that is always easy to do. It is often not easy to do. It takes work. The notion that a spiritual path is just this kind of like easy way to go is absurd. Spiritual path takes work. Spiritual path takes practice. Spiritual path is one in which we look at every encounter and we make a choice. And we do make that choice, by the way, but you make it either unconsciously or consciously. And the Course in Miracles says the purpose of our lives is to make of every human interaction an opportunity to give love and receive love. Which is the same thing as saying, I seek to make of every human interaction an opportunity to experience heaven. Which is the same thing as, I am willing to make of every human interaction an opportunity to experience oneness. Same thing as saying, it is my opportunity to forgive. Is the same thing as saying, it is my opportunity to be happy. Now, the Course in Miracles says, obviously, there are two worlds. There is the world of your brother's innocence, and there's the world of your brother's guilt. The world of your brother's innocence, just like your innocence, probably you had some interactions today. Think of your day. Don't think of other people. Think of yourself. There were times when you probably showed your best self, right? There were times you were noble, times you were friendly. Somebody called, hey, how you doing? Now, I'll probably tell you something about that person you were so nice to. They were nice to you. How did I know? Right? In other words, people are nice to us. Isn't that difficult being forgiving? Isn't that difficult being loving when they acted exactly as we wanted them to act? But then there were probably some other times today when you did not show your most noble self. You did not show your most friendly self. You did not show your most loving self. Now, why didn't you do that? Well, because their behavior in some way manifests their mistakes, which triggered you. In other words, they did not show you the Christ or perfection within them. And because they did not show you their Christ, your Christ did not respond. Now, Jesus, who has actualized full Christ consciousness, responds with the Christ within him regardless of how people act to him. And that is why he triumphs, which we will get to. The notion here is the Course in Miracles says, you speak from the Christ and others will answer. You speak from your ego, the ego and others will answer. But look at your own reactions to life. Now, this is the thing. If today, in those places where you were not your most loving, noble, friendly self, it's not because someone else acted from their ego and you said, I think I'll be rude and obnoxious. I don't think any of us woke up this morning and said, I'm going to be rude and obnoxious. However, we are living in a world where we have been taught no transcendent conflict resolution. That's what a Buddha or Jesus, that's what these people represent for us. Consciousnesses which have triumphed, which have now stand in victory, as the Course in Miracles would say, they don't win the battle, they remain above the battlefield. And what that means is, when someone behaves towards us, which is what is less than loving, we don't know how to get our needs met without hitting back. If we did, we would. Now, this is the point, the critical point, the critical juncture in something even more important than your love life, the planet. Okay? And all that our love lives do, all that our individual lives do is just become a microcosmic representation of the macrocosm. It's what goes on between you and the person you date is not that different than what goes on between Israel and the Arabs, for instance. Not all Arabs, Lebanon, at this point, for instance. Now look at this. We know Buddha lived before Jesus. Buddha said action, reaction, action, reaction. He described how the mind operates. You act, somebody else reacts, and they act, and they react, and they react. And you see it not only in your own experiences, because remember we said that person that called you today, they were a jerk. So were you noble and loving anyway? No, because you didn't know in that moment. You had not been taught transcendence as a tool. You had not been taught victory in Christ as part of your problem-solving repertoire. Right? So you immediately went to reaction because you honestly in that moment, like the rest of us, didn't know how to get your needs met in that moment through love. The Course in Miracles says there are only two emotions, love and fear. What is love? Love is the true self within us, the innocent self. Okay? What is fear? The false self. You with me? What the Course calls the ego. Now, the Course in Miracles says there are only two emotions, love and fear. Now, that person who called you up this morning and was very, very rude to you. You just woke up. They're very, very rude to you. What emotion were they coming from? Right. Not obnoxiousness. Fear. So the Course in Miracles, remember, we're talking about victory in God being your problem-solving repertoire. So the Course in Miracles says, okay. Now, if you just perceive according to the senses of the world, you're saying, what the hell are you acting like this to me for? Let me tell you something. You call me up in the morning and you act like that, let me give you a piece of my mind. That's called action, reaction. What's that going to lead to? More reaction. Oh, yeah! Right? Look at Israel right now. You bomb me, so I'm going to bomb you, so I'm going to bomb you, so I'm going to bomb you. So what you've got is, and once again, there's no judgment here. I understand it. What would I do if I were president of Israel? I can't even imagine it. You've got these suicide bombers coming in. What are they supposed to do? They want to defend themselves. Action, reaction, action, reaction. All you're going to do is escalate the cycle of violence. Jesus was born 500 years after Buddha. And the message of Christ is, yes, action, reaction, action, reaction describes the world outside us. But in a moment of grace, all karma is burned. In a moment of grace, all karma is burned. We live in a world where because our eyes are still attached to that which is without, there is basically no way to get to heaven. There is basically no way to get to heaven because what we're waiting for is for other people to behave perfectly. We're saying, I'll have a great relationship with you if you would just act the way I want you to. Right? I'll end war with that country when they act the way I want them to. Right? The level of heaven is the level in which our experience of other people is not based on what they do. Now, what Israel goes through, what any country goes through, is what you and I go through when we have arguments with people. Well, what am I supposed to do? Look what they're doing to me. Now, where we have come to on the planet, we have come to the end of one cycle of history. We have come to an end of a cycle of history because we are now living at a time. If you look at world politics, this is certainly the example. Today in the New York Times, I was reading the article about how Gaddafi is building that poison gas plant so deep into a mountain that only a two-pronged nuclear device could get rid of it. I mean, we're getting to the point now where if we just keep mounting action, reaction, action, reaction, the chances for our children's survival becomes a more and more diminished possibility as we move on. The Course in Miracles tells us that salvation begins when we consider the possibility that there might be another way. Another way. What is the other way? Well, first of all, you recognize the realm of consciousness which does not work. The realm of consciousness in which we base our experience of people on what they do is a realm of consciousness where heaven is not possible. That's the first thing we do, is recognize that one of the exercises in the Course is, the world I see holds nothing that I want. there is a kind of creative detachment we want to make from what people do. Sometimes people will make us happy. Sometimes people will behave in a way that is not perfect. But as the Course in Miracles says, you are not to be at the effect of lovelessness coming from without or coming within. What is the alternative? The alternative, and this has to do with the cycle of history that is now over and a cycle of history that's now beginning. Theoretically, the cycle of history that's now beginning is one in which we recognize that our greatest power is not external power. Our greatest power is not the power of our doing. The greatest power is spiritual power. When Teilhard de Chardin said that as powerful a shift as it was on the planet, when we harness the power of fire, it is nothing compared to what will happen on this planet when we harness the power of love. Go back to that phone call. They were obnoxious, you were obnoxious back. They were obnoxious even more than you tend to be more obnoxious back. What do you need? Do you need somebody to tell you what you should say this time to make it different with them? The Course in Miracles would say what you say to that person is not what is going to determine whether or not there is breakthrough. Because Buddha said action, reaction, action, reaction. And Jesus said in a moment of grace, all karma is burned. Grace does not begin with what you say or do. Grace begins with what we think. Our greatest power is not our power to do. Our greatest power is our power to think. That is the message of all religious teachings. Our greatest power, because thinking is the causal level. Thinking is the level of cause. Doing is the level of effect. As long as we stay in our experience of life on the level of effect rather than cause, all we will do, as you hear the phrase sometimes said, is move around the furniture on the deck of the Titanic. Right? What it means to enter the next dispensation of the human race, what it means to exit the phase of history in terms of the evolution of the species, which is now closing, and to truly enter not only the new paradigm, but genuinely the new dispensation of being in the human species, is to pull in to the level of cause, to detach from the level of effect, and know my greatest power to affect this situation is in the level of my thought. The highest level of thinking is called, in some systems, prayer. What is prayer? Prayer is when we take the mind and put it back into the hands of the Father. Take the mind and put it back into first cause. In ancient Egyptian religion, although they didn't even have the word religion, because their whole lives were so infused with divine consciousness, they didn't even have a word for something separate than that. But they had the idea of two forces. Just as we talk about Christ versus ego, they had chaos versus cosmos. And the force of cosmos is the force of first cause. So the key to relationships from a sense of divine consciousness is to be very clear what you're thinking about people. For instance, I judge you, but I don't tell you that I judge you. In fact, I might not even be conscious of the ways in which I judge you. But I think that if I act a certain way, everything will be okay between us. Right? And we know that that's not true. Because ultimately, the Course in Miracles says, your self-perception determines your behavior. What you honestly believe deep in your heart will betray you. What you honestly believe deep in your heart, you will somehow make known. There will be an inflection in your voice. There will be some little thing that you do which will let the person know who you really are and will let people know how you really feel. So we have come here in order to take all the attitudes that we know sit in there and become the barriers in front of the light. Once again, it's not your job to seek for love, but to seek within yourself all the barriers you keep against its coming. The real you is in love with everyone in the world. The real you is in love with everyone in the world. And the real you is loved deeply by everyone in the world. And the real you is a natural magnet to the people who would be your deepest and dearest companions in taking the walk to God together, which will increase the opportunity for you and to them to experience heaven with all beings. So we're not talking about a dynamic theory of going out and getting the perfect partner. We're not talking about a dynamic theory of going out and making oneness happen with others. We're talking about the magnetic theory of relationships. We're talking about ourselves being in such a magnetic place, and the truth within us is that. That's why little children come into a room and everybody goes, "Oh, you're so adorable." But you walk into a room, why don't people go, "Oh, you're so adorable"? Well, if they were honest, they would. If they were in touch with their true self, they would. But even at this stage of consciousness, if you were in touch with your true self, they might not say it, but they would notice that a light just entered the room. Right? So that is what we are here to do. We are here to let go all our barriers we hold against its coming. My generation of women, in looking at what happened for many of us in our relationships with men, for instance, we fell for some and then came to conspire with, I believe, a rather misinformed opinion about relationships with men. We grew up, it's very interesting because if you sort of look at the research about this, European women, which is not to say Europeans don't have their own mishigas, but in general, European women did not grow up thinking they could either be smart or sexy. Right? They could either be achievers or they could be attractive to men. European women didn't buy that. The Course in Miracles says, beware the danger of a hidden belief. Rampant in my generation was this belief that we had something much more important to do than men and children, right? And the idea that our goal was to get a husband was so beneath us. The idea that we couldn't do better. I remember a woman saying to me that she had a child and her own mother said to her, "Well, you still have time to do something with your life," right? We bought that. Now, we're getting it, you know, now that our ovaries are basically gone, we're thin, right? Right? But isn't that what happened to many of us? We had the core belief that it either wasn't worth attaining, it was almost like a guilty secret that that's what our hearts desired. It was almost like a guilty secret. There are women who aborted children because for some reason it was almost like, it's not the thing I should want to be doing right now. And I believe it was actually a generational tragedy that so many of us thought, you know, we would have our children after I'm already vice president at IBM, I'll have my kids, right? Like this was some great thing to have them later. This did not occur to us that old wise women don't get pregnant, right? It did not occur to us that there was a natural order to things. The importance of seeing this, well, there's many reasons why it's important to see this. One of the reasons it's so important to see it is because time after time after time, there'll be a woman who doesn't understand why she can't find a man. Because she desires a man, but in front of the desire is this belief that it's really beneath her that this should be such a deep desire. Now, the Course in Miracles says our desire is our prayer. Look how many of your desires you block. Look how many of your desires you block. Because you think it's not good to want it. And so the universe gets exactly what it's reading from your subconscious mind. It's getting things, your desire attracts opportunity, and then your subconscious belief that the desire is somehow unworthy sabotages the opportunities. The problem is not that you don't attract men. The problem is not that you don't attract women. The problem is that you blow it with the men and the women that you attract. Isn't that correct? Isn't that true for most of us? The issue is not that we don't have opportunities. The issue is that we are betrayed. Our behavior betrays us.
and we come to demonstrate externally that which deep in our minds we have come to believe. Are you with me so far? Any yeah buts? Any questions at this point? What would I say about the excessive violence against women? First of all, violence is the problem on the planet. Violence against women, violence against children, and violence against men. Violence is the quintessential problem on the planet. I don't believe that AIDS is the main problem on the planet, or violence against women is the problem on the planet, or war is the problem on the planet. I believe human suffering is the problem on the planet. There is a tendency to categorize things. When you categorize things too much, what happens is it's like a puzzle. And you toss over the puzzle and you have all the different pieces on the floor. And you get really concentrated on a piece of it. But you can be very concentrated on this piece and that piece and that piece and that piece, but you can't find the true meaning to any of the pieces until you put the puzzle together. And that is a kind of patriarchal consciousness right there. In the ancient Egyptian religion, the myth of Isis and Osiris is one in which when Seth killed Osiris, he cut him up into many different pieces. That is a way to keep love at bay, is to see reality in terms of basic categories. And also when you do that, you are tempted to think that some people are more deserving than others. You are tempted to think that some forms of human suffering are somehow more important than other forms of human suffering. So the first thing I say is that the realm of consciousness in which we will find triumph and solution is one in which the stand that we take is not against violence against women, not against any particular form of violence, but against human suffering. And the reason there is any human suffering is because the heart is closed. Now, interestingly enough about this business about violence against women, in the last 30 years, I want to be very clear here because I don't want to in any way be misunderstood. I don't want to in any way seem backlash myself. So I think Susan Faludi is right. There has been a backlash. I consider myself a feminist. I think the women's movement is extremely important. I think the women's movement has taken great strides, and I think we took some huge, huge mistakes. And we have been wounded in the process. Once again, this is not a damnation of the women's movement. It's saying a movement is just like an individual. You go through processes of growth. And I don't believe we can go forward until we do own some of the mistakes that we've made. Okay. Part of what women's liberation became was the false belief that we were liberated to the extent to which we could be like men. So we grew up, many of us in my generation, I'm 43, many of us in my generation grew up to be what Carl Jung called the father's daughter. Once again, many women in my generation really had the belief that mommy had a meaningless life, but daddy had a meaningful life. See, mommy, all she did was take care of the kids. Why didn't she do anything with her life? You know what I'm saying? Our kids are going to be in therapy 15 years. Why didn't you stay home? Right? It's real clear what's happening here. Real clear what's happening here. Okay. But daddy, we thought, oh, he left the house and he had a briefcase and he went to the office. He was out there doing something really important and meaningful. And so we wanted to grow up and do that. So we ourselves, in this process that we thought was liberating, we actually contributed to the dishonor of the feminine. Once again, it's like, who knew? We didn't know we were doing it, right? So, and our parents didn't know when all these psychological things went down that actually contributed to the syndromes. So we ourselves dishonored, grew up in many ways to dishonor women. Some of the most patriarchal people on the planet are women. And any woman in this room knows, any woman particularly in the workplace knows, that it's kind of frightening to hear that a man down the hall doesn't like you. But to hear that a woman down the hall doesn't like you sends chills up your spine. That is because men in this society have been given rules of war. Men, straight men, are a pretty decent lot. Straight men have been given sports and war, right, to act out their aggressions. But many of us, homosexuals and women, we had to keep our knives in our purses. It is not accurate to say that men are more violent than women. They act it out overtly. We do it with our tongues. We do it with a different mode of aggressiveness. Now, we live in a world, because it is only externally
geared, it thinks in terms of managing the effects of evil, managing the effects of hatred. What are we going to do about men who are violent toward women? But from a spiritual perspective, the issue is not how can we manage the effects of hatred. Now, for instance, violence toward women. If you step back, you look at the broader perspective, the issue is not violence towards women. The issue is evil unleashed on the planet. The issue is global hatred. The issue is that 50 years ago, my parents' generation thought that when they defeated Hitler, it was like Hitler had become this cancerous tumor. And 50 years ago, the West actually thought they'd gotten the tumor and gotten rid of the cancer, and everything was going to be great now. We've made progress towards love. 50 years later, it's so clear. The cancer's back. It's metastasized. It's throughout the system. It's in Rwanda. It's in Sarajevo. It's in Israel. It's in Lebanon. It's on the streets of the United States. And from the old paradigm, what we're going to try to do is manage the effects. Like, look at the newspaper. The leaders of the world are kind of like teaming. They're going like this. It's tightrope. You really got to hand it to them because they're doing pretty good, all things considered. It's like, I got to handle it over there. I'll have a treaty over there. I'll pass a law over there. Now, basically, ultimately, there is no law strong enough. There is no legislation binding enough. There is no police force strong enough. There is no peace treaty binding enough to contain the forces of hatred when they have been unleashed on a global scale. The spiritual perspective does not just manage hatred. It undoes hatred. A woman stood up at my lecture in Los Angeles and she said, my parents had moved, she was an African-American woman. She said, my parents have moved to a small town in Georgia. She said, all the news there right now is that the Ku Klux Klan wants to have a march, a demonstration. And the Constitution says we have to give them a permit to have the march. So this is obviously a very big deal. This woman was saying, you know, I'm scared for my parents. What do we want in America? Well, from one paradigm, the question is, well, do we want to keep the Constitution intact? Or do we want to say the Ku Klux Klan can't meet? Well, the problem with saying the Ku Klux Klan can't meet is that next week it might be your club or my club that can't meet. So the old paradigm has taken us as far as it can go. What we really want on the planet is that they would hold a Ku Klux Klan rally and no one would come. Right? You can't be sure. For instance, look at Germany during World War II. Hitler could never have done what he did had it not been for thousands of people who were willing to conspire with him. Thousands of people who did not come up with those ideas themselves, but did not have the moral fiber to say no to those ideas when they were in their midst. We can't be sure that we can create a society in which there would never be a Hitler, but we can create a society in which even if a Hitler stands up, not enough people will conspire for that person to be able to ultimately have effect. Right? So ultimately what I'm trying to say is you cannot just manage the effects of darkness. You must create the light. Now, real problem 30 years ago, and this is not to say that there's necessarily more violence against women, because I think in a large part it's just that more violence against women is exposed. However, 30 years ago, we as women ourselves were carrying a lot of unconscious contempt for the feminine force. We ourselves thought there was something wrong about this women and children first mentality that had become a basic archetype in human consciousness. We ourselves dishonored it. And when you got half the human race dishonoring it, women are much more vulnerable. We all know from the O.J. Simpson trial, for instance, it's so interesting that it came to be seen as a racial issue. And there were definite racial issues there with the police department. And a racial issue that is extremely important for this whole country if you've got a whole group of people who are mistreated and obviously systemically mistreated by the police. But at the same time, look how the consciousness of the nation was not ready to contain another huge issue. I'm not saying a more important huge issue, but a huge issue as huge, and that is violence towards women. Couldn't even get there. And that is because there are so many of us that in our own minds know that we have, with certain thoughts, been ourselves violent towards the feminine, violence towards women, not only other women, but ourselves. Because violent thoughts, ultimately, as Jesus said, ultimately your thoughts are as important as your actions. So once again, we can talk about the various ways in which violence has erupted. We can talk about the various ways in which children, men, women, and nations are receiving the effect and at the effect of horrific violence. No one in this room certainly needs to be convinced that this violence is present among us. I can't stand it when these movie makers who make these hideous movies for television and movie theaters that splash these gratuitous violent images into the minds of our children, and they have the audacity to claim that they're just the messenger, like we haven't gotten the message. Like we don't know, we need to be told. Does any American need to be told anymore? This culture is totally obsessed with violence. We not only see it in the newspapers and see it in the news, we pay to go see more. And this is a nation in a death dance. This is a nation which is trying to scream out, do something, I'm dying. So, the issue of violence towards women is the same as the issue of any other manifestation of violence. And that is not that we analyze it further. If you bring a person who's been in a terrible car accident into the emergency room, the doctor doesn't have time to say, what kind of car were you driving and what intersection did this occur at? There's blood in the emergency room. The doctor has to apply acute crisis care. And at this point, we must apply acute crisis care. There is only one force in the universe adequate to the task of reversing the trend of planetary darkness, and that is the love in our hearts. Or at least so says the sacred traditions. I'm not here to sell you on that belief, but if you join with me in that belief, then I am here with you to create a context, a vortex of power, as it were. Now, for instance, is there one person in this room who agrees with me that the love inside the human heart is adequate to the task of containing evil, reversing the trend, bringing resurrection out of crucifixion, and reversing this downward spin of American and world culture in order that there might be a global renaissance in our country and every other? Is there one person here? What they would say in the old churches is, can I find a witness? Okay, now, it's very interesting. All I needed was one. And we'd have a quorum, because when two or more are joined, when two or more, you get two people who believe that, and the opening is there. This is the same, by the way, as the image of Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark is the archetype of history at this moment, Ark A-R-C. The rains are coming, clearly. The Ark is within. The animals enter two by two. This Course in Miracles says salvation is a collaborative venture. Heaven is entered two by two. I can't enter the ark which saves us during the rains unless I forgive someone. It is only as I'm thinking with love on you that we both get to enter the ark. Now, did the animals feel the rain? Yeah, I mean, that boat has been a pretty scary place for a while the rains were coming down, but the animals remained safe. The animals which then walked out of the ark at the end of the rains and seeded the species of the earth after that point. So Noah's Ark is the Ark within, the Ark of consciousness, wherein we shall be protected from the rains and we shall receive the human race. Right? Now, violence towards women then, and the real question we have to ask ourselves is, do I have violent thoughts towards any woman? One of the things that I found really interesting with reporters is, and America is very odd, see, basically witch burning has not stopped. And basically when you talk about violence towards women, you're talking about one of the several areas where we tend to underestimate the effects of the fact that we were founded by Puritans. Just as the Civil War could end slavery but could not end racism. Why is that? Civil War was an external phenomenon. An external phenomenon can only affect external things. So a war could end the institution of slavery, but the war could not end racist thinking. So in a way, what happened, racism went underground. When you see the founding of organizations like the Ku Klux Klan, it was actually after
the Civil War. So once again, as every generation of Americans has the job of creating a more perfect union, the generation, you know, Thomas Jefferson said about race in America, he said, "I tremble for my country when I consider that God is just and that his justice shall not sleep forever." So he presaged the Civil War. Abraham Lincoln obviously saw the Civil War as our karmic payback for the evils of slavery. By the way, do you know how many people died in Vietnam? About 50,000. Do you know how many people died in World War II? Between 200,000 and 300,000. Do you know how many people died in the Civil War? 650,000. It's very interesting. It was a huge bloodletting in America. So the point is for us to realize the size of the conflagration that was produced out of the argument over slavery in this country. 650,000 people died in this country because we were arguing over the evil of the institution. The forces of goodness obviously won, having to do with the institution. A war as an external remedy could rid the planet of an institution, i.e. an external phenomenon. A war being an external remedy could not heal us of the real source of the phenomenon, which is on the level of thinking. A war cannot eradicate racism. A war cannot eradicate wicked thinking. So what's happened is that a lot of that just went underground after the Civil War. What we're dealing with now, and that's how history is evolving, we're getting to a point now where our external remedies cannot, if we are only dealing with problems on the level of the symptomatology, we will not be able to truly heal the planet. So now we must dig deeper. If we really want to rid the planet of hatred, we must get serious within our own minds. All of us, black, white, Jew, Gentile, all of us, gay, straight, we must look deep within ourselves. The white person must ask, am I racist? The black person must ask, am I racist? The straight person must ask, am I homophobic? The gay person must ask, am I heterophobic? I mean, who among us is completely devoid of any thoughts that some group, for some reason, really is not as good as we are? And the only way that we can truly stand for love and the eradication of hatred on the planet is if we look deep within ourselves. And also for white European America, if we can have a critical mass of true conscious awareness and understanding of the evils which have occurred in this country. When an evil is acknowledged, it's easier to forgive it. So white America is stuck psychologically at a place where we feel that because so much suffering occurred in the Civil War, it's like we paid our dues. No, we didn't. We paid our karmic dues for slavery. But we've not paid our karmic dues for the insidious systemic nature of racism itself. And no one is asking us to pay our dues in terms of punishment, but we will be paying for it in terms of punishment. And in fact, we're starting to pay for it in terms of punishment unless and until we pay for it in terms of conscious awareness. And that is why a consciousness of atonement in this country, not taking blame, but taking responsibility, and just a widespread awareness that we recognize that a great evil has occurred here, and we do atone for the errors, and we do apologize to a whole group of people who not only themselves, but their parents, and their parents before them, and their parents before them, were the effect of an evil in our midst. And that we truly, deeply apologize and ask for forgiveness. That act of atonement within our hearts will miraculously heal this country.
Now, they stopped burning witches, but we did not rout out of Western consciousness the belief that there's something a little dangerous about female power. Right? It's not an accident the word bitch rhymes with witch. And I mean that with all sincerity. She's a witch, she's a witch, she's a witch. She's a bitch, she's a bitch, she's a bitch. Have you ever seen her be a bitch? No, but I know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody who said they dated her and she is one. Right? Right? So it's the thoughts we think. It's the thoughts we think. And with witch power in the United States, you totally see the way women are burned at the stake today. And who were the women who were burned at the stake? The women who were burned at the stake were the widows, the herbalists, young women who in some way had sexual power, or older women who were no longer owned by men. It's like, who are the women that the United States allows itself to love? Mother Teresa. She's old and she's out of town. When does America allow itself to love Hillary Clinton? When she takes trips. she's so popular when she's in Greece holding a baby, right? So we all have to ask ourselves, do I honor women? So once again, the ego would say it's their problem, and we have to take people who dishonor women, and we have to do something to them. But if it's in fact a holographic universe, which seems pretty clear now that it is, we know what that means, don't we, holographic universe? If it's not a holographic universe, old Newtonian science, you know, says that the external world is separate from me. And how I perceive the world doesn't have much to do with what happens here. It's how I act on the world that changes it. But that science is obsolete. Quantum physics has now disproven that view of reality. Quantum physics has now proven that as I perceive the world differently, Heisenberg's uncertainty principle proves that as I perceive an object differently, it is different. Once again, if we want to get rid of violence towards women, each and every man and each and every woman in this room, particularly the women, unfortunately, have to ask ourselves, where am I uncharitable towards a woman? And once again, it's not enough to just tolerate. I remember a friend of mine who once said to me, Marianne, I didn't mean to hurt you. I said, yeah, well, you didn't mean to love me either. See, a lot of times we'll say, well, I didn't mean to hurt you. Real evil has been done by people who didn't mean to hurt anybody. Like, that's a great excuse. We must intend to love. We must intend to love. To tolerate a group of people is not going to be enough to make this planet heal. To tolerate a group of people is not going to be enough to make this society heal. Only when we make the breakthrough into I intend to love that group of people. And how can we intend to love that group of people? Well, like we already said, the real you already loves them. But you bought some false beliefs. Now, you might have let the sins of the father are handed down to the generation. You weren't born a racist. You weren't born an anti-Semite. You weren't born to hate any group. But by the time you were 2 years old, you might have heard mommy or daddy making racist comments or making anti-Semitic comments or making comments against this group or that group. They are learned responses. We are born with love, the Course says, etched on our hearts. And judgmental responses are taught us. Also, it's our worldview. Let's say women who are mean about other women. If you have the view that the external world shows us, you understand, you believe that there are only so many pieces of the pie. So if somebody has a piece of the pie, there's less for you. So if you believe that, you see a woman succeeding at work, and you think you have to hate her, you have to judge her, you have to hope she'll fail, because as long as she succeeds, you think there's less opportunity for you to succeed. Well, the truth of the matter is the exact opposite. First of all, the spiritual worldview demonstrates that there is no lack in the realm of consciousness. The more you have, the more there is available. So if a woman is winning at work and you think, oh, I can't stand that she's winning because if she wins, I lose, then the problem is the more you judge her, then when you yourself try to win, there's a little place in your subconscious which says, put down the woman who's winning, put down the woman who's winning, put down the woman who's winning, and your subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between you and that other person because you are that other person. Your subconscious mind just heard, sabotage woman, so you'll sabotage you. And the truth of the matter is only what we give do we get. If you bless